Well, happy Monday morning to you. Another week in, what is this, August? You know, this is our 50th year in the car business. Well, in the new car dealership business. My dad bought Lawson Chevrolet. Well, he bought Bewley Chevrolet and turned it into Lawson Chevrolet. And on August the 2nd of 1971. So by my math, that's 50 years. I did a post on Facebook. I found my dad used to keep these scrapbooks, and he probably had, they're very big things, big enough to put a newspaper article in or an advertisement, and he would clip those. Just about every ad that we ran, he kept it. I always wondered why he did that and why that meant so much to him, but I get it now because, you know, now I can go back and look at ads from 1971 where we're selling Chevy Vegas for $19.95. That's about what they were worth. Of course, you know, that's a lot more money back then than it is today, right? But things have changed a lot. I know the oil embargo hit not too long after that and almost crushed us. And then there was another one in 1979. And then multiple recessions that we have been able to somehow survive over the years. It's amazing that how you kind of forget those things when business is good, like it has been for the last, I don't know, 5 or 6 years. Of course, the pandemic, when it hit, we were looking at each other wondering, okay, is this going to be it? Because nobody knew how this thing was going to turn out. And it turned out that, you know, vehicle production went down. But everybody had a lot of cars at that time. And then as spring started to roll around, people started circulating. Car dealerships were considered to be an essential business. So we were allowed to stay open and operate, and the business has just roared back, only to be hit square between the eyes with a sledgehammer called the chip shortage. And so that's still wreaking havoc on the car business. Ford announced late last week, about a huge shipment of F-150s ended up being smashed up in a train wreck. Can you believe that? As if the pandemic wasn't a train wreck enough, now an actual train wreck happens in Missouri, probably coming from the Kansas City plant where they build F-150s. And so, you know, they were built, they had chips in them, headed to dealers, and they got derailed. I think it was a total of 48 railroad cars, and they pack them on there like sardines, so I'd say that's quite a few bits of inventory that maybe we won't be seeing. Some Ford dealers, they haven't announced or told us exactly which vehicles are involved or if any of them were ours, but we shall soon find out, I guess. After watching several of the auction sites towards the end of last week, if you own an old Honda Prelude, maybe an old Toyota Celica, remember those cars? Older Chevy Blazers when they came out, even the Chevy S10 Blazer, remember those? They came out in the late 80s or early 80s. I think 85 was when that body style came out. It stuck around for a long time until they changed the name. Called it the Trailblazer. No idea why. Those cars are really gaining in value. You know, of course, older Mercedes, the Jeeps, Jeep Wagoneers from the 60s and 70s. Remember the ones that had the wood grain all over the side and the big pillowy leather seats and stuff? Those things are really hot right now. If you know where any of those are, let me know. Or an International Scout. You know, that was a competitor, not much of a competitor, but somewhat of a competitor for the Ford Bronco, and you know, those are pretty valuable. Let's see, FJ60, which is the Toyota Land Cruiser called the FJ60. Those are really hot right now. Camaros from the late 60s are hot. You know, I've even seen some Camaros from the 70s starting to go up in value a little bit. They weren't very powerful. I mean, the 70s was kind of a time period where they were trying to figure out the emission controls and trying to figure out how to get cars to run right with all these emission controls on them and not spew an excessive amount of carbon monoxide and other nasties out the tailpipe. And In the process, they killed the horsepower. I remember when Corvettes during that period had about 175 horsepower, and that wouldn't pull the greasy string, if you know what I mean. Let's see. What else? Honda S2000. You know, that was a sports car that was a good competitor for the Mazda Miata. And those things are bringing big money. Here's a original owner, 20,000-mile, 2004 Honda S2000. It's actually, the current bidding is at $26,500. That's probably more than it's sold for new. So, you know, what you may think is not valuable that's out in your garage that you've had for a long time, it could have some good value if you just know where to go with it and who to ask. So anyway, you can ask me anytime. And if I don't know, I'll do the research. I know where to find out information like that, and you may or may not. Some people look at, I guess, the internet, Kelley Blue Book. I think NADA has an old car guide that a lot of people use. But I know what cars are bringing based on actual sales results, and that's quite different, much more accurate. So anyway, we'll take our first break, and we'll be back here in just a minute. Okay, I'm back. This is Lenny Lawson again, as if you didn't know. And, you know, occasionally I do some really, well, maybe not so smart things, kind of like Friday. I had a customer call, and she'd been in the previous day and test driven a Nissan Rogue and a Nissan Murano. And she was a little reluctant. She had a quarterback with her. If you don't know what that is, that's the person that comes along that helps. And sometimes they don't help, they hurt. In this case, he helped because, you know, he was we knew each other really well, and I knew her well also. So there was a level of comfort. You know, there's always more comfort when you know somebody that you're dealing with. But anyway, we went through that process of evaluating the vehicles, and they went on a test drive and came back. And she said, you know, I do everything I can to take the pressure off. I want people to feel comfortable. I offered to let her drive it home overnight, and if she didn't like it the next day, just bring it back, give me the keys, and just go on your way, and then maybe later on when you decide to do something, we'll proceed. And she thought that was great, but decided not to do it. Well, she calls me late Friday and said, Lenny, I have decided to go ahead with that Nissan Rogue. And I was just kidding, and I said, well, we sold it. And there was just silence on the phone. You sold it? Oh, my goodness. You know, and I said, no, I'm just kidding. We didn't sell it. It's still here. So, she was so relieved. So she decided she's going to come and meet me at 5 o'clock on Friday afternoon. Well, I go out to the sales desk and walk up to my manager. And I said, Shane, the lady that was in here yesterday is going to go ahead and take the SL Rogue in that gray color, that two-wheel drive. And he said, we sold it this morning. What? Yeah, we sold it this morning. Had a lady come in, and she was getting a vehicle serviced and saw that thing and said, I want it. So she bought it. I said, super. So anyway, I was at a loss with what I was going to do. And I said, do we have any others in the same color? He said, as a matter of fact, we do. We have the exact same vehicle except in all-wheel drive. And I said, well, how much is all-wheel drive? And he said, $1,400. So now I have to decide what I'm going to do. Now, what would you want me to do? So you're my cut. Now, she didn't leave a deposit. She didn't. She just said she wanted to go home and think about it. And she didn't want me to sell it. I hope you don't sell it. You know, I remember her saying that. And I'm just, I won't sell it. And I was incorrect in that assumption. So if you're a customer and that happens to you, are you going to be mad? Are you going to feel like Lenny Lawson took advantage of you and sold a car right out from under you? You know, some people would. I've seen that happen. Others will say, no, that's just business. I mean, if I wanted it, I could have bought it at that time. It's not your fault you sold it. No need to apologize. So let's say you're one of those people. What do I do on the I can find her another one probably somewhere. I'd rather sell what I have in stock because as low as inventories are, dealers really don't want to trade around that much. But so I have to make a decision. Should I ask her for maybe the cost difference on the thing instead of making any profit on the four-wheel drive? You know, there's a margin in every option that you have on a car. And so should I offer that to her? Should I actually just give it to her? I mean, when I give it to her, I mean, that's like, let's say that the option cost me $1,200. So I'm giving her $1,200. Did my mistake rise to the level of needing to make that kind of adjustment? And to fairly answer that question, well, let's just put it this way. Different people are going to answer that question differently. Some people are going to say, yeah, I think, you know, since you offered to sell it to her for that price, then you ought to honor that price, even because you sold it out from under her. Really? I really didn't. I didn't even know it happened until too late. You know, I could have prevented that problem. I could have just, you know, told him to hold the vehicle, but I just didn't. And so anyway, she is going to come in. She came in that afternoon, and she wanted to drive it, and she wasn't mad. She was cool with it. She didn't want to pay the extra money, and I get it. So what I did is I split it with her, and she was tickled to death. You know, she said, well, I kind of wanted all-wheel drive anyway. So that's what we ended up doing, and I think that she felt good about that. If you watch American Pickers, you know, and I think it has done a lot for people understanding what buying and selling and negotiating and profit making and stuff like that is all about. It is not a sin to make a profit. Most people think that car dealers make a lot more profit per transaction than they really do. Now, when dealers are selling vehicles way over MSRP and stuff, yeah, the profit margins go up, but it's still not exorbitant. I remember back in the early 70s, we had 21% markup in an Chevy Silverado or C10 pickup truck. And we had about the vehicle we had the most markup in was 24% was a Chevy Corvette, but Corvettes were selling for $7,500 back then. And you could buy a nice Chevy truck for, you know, $39.95. So the margins were necessary to be able to sustain a business. Now we're lucky if we make 6%. I mean, we can sell, you take a, you know, just a base Hyundai Elantra, just a base car, or some of the smaller cars that you see it on other dealer lots. If they sell it for MSRP, they're making anywhere from $200 to $400. It's not much margin on a car. And a lot of people find that hard to believe, but all you have to do is go online. You can check it out yourself. I used to have a professor at UT. His name was Wild Bill Cherry. How's that for a professor? He taught economic geography, and he had this real gravelly voice, and he said, if you don't believe me, check it out. And most people wouldn't bother because he was Wild Bill Cherry. And he was usually right. So that's the kind of thing that we get into in car dealerships sometimes when things don't really go as planned. I'll never forget working at the Chevy store when I first started. We had two Silverados that were the same color. And they were actually used. And it was rare, unusual thing for that to happen. And I was selling one of them, and I got the paperwork mixed up. And so we billed out the right car, but the guy left in the wrong car or the wrong truck. And I saw it driving off, and my manager walked up to me. His name was Myron Bernard. He was a part of Bachman Bernard for many, many years, but he was our sales manager back then. He said, where's that truck going? I said, well, I just sold it. He said, no, that's not the truck that I just billed out. Whoops. And so I had to call the customer and get him back. And now they weren't real happy about that either. And I get it. But, you know, those kind of things, do you try to be understanding or do you pitch a fit? Some people just are natural fit pitchers, I think. They take pride in their temper. You know, I try to be nice when I get bad service. No, I am nice. I'm not try to be nice. I'm nice. And if they don't respond in the right way, then I just won't do business with them in the future. I mean, so many people just aren't trained. And you know, people should be, I think, given some degree of accommodation to make a mistake. I wish that same thing would happen on the highway when somebody, if you accidentally pull in front of somebody, you know, that violent reaction where they're making hand gestures at you. I just don't understand. You know, it's a total stranger. I made a mistake. I'm sorry. I shouldn't have pulled out. You know, I'm not trying to ruin your life or anything. But people just don't, I just don't think that people are willing to cut others, or especially strangers, any slack right now. And I don't know what's causing that. I'm not a psychiatrist. I'm not a societal analyzer of behavior patterns in society. But I do see a lot of that in personal circumstances and, you know, restaurants and driving in cars. You know what I'm saying? You've probably seen it, too. I'm not crazy, am I? Well, maybe a little. We'll take our last break and be back in just a minute. Okay, I'm back. You know, a lot of people think that you have the right of rescission on the purchase of a new or used vehicle. Have you ever heard of that? It's where you have the right to back out if it hasn't been more than 3 days. Now, you do have a right of rescission under certain circumstances. For example, if I were to come to your house and do the entire transaction at your dinner table, which I have done before. Matter of fact, I've eaten some pretty good food on some of those negotiations. If that happens at your dinner table, then you do have 3 days to back out of a deal on a car. If you buy a house or sign a mortgage or something like that, I think they give you 3 days right of rescission. But if you go to a car dealership to buy a car and you pay for it and you leave, you own it. That's just the way it is. Now, if there was fraud committed and you can prove it, then you can probably get out of the deal. But that involves, you know, probably some legal assistance, and you have to threaten to sue and so forth. A lot of dealerships train their salespeople, managers. If somebody mentions lawsuit, stop talking to them and introduce them to the general manager or the dealer, and let the dealer do the talking. Because sometimes people run their mouths and say things that they should not say and create problems that will be rehashed in court. No car dealer wants to go to court, I can assure you. They want to solve the problem. They want to retain the relationship. Now, that's probably an unfair blanket statement. There are some really high-volume dealerships that don't give a rip. You know, they sell enough cars. It doesn't matter if they make, you know, a certain number of people angry. They're fine with that. That's just the cost of doing business. But, you know, most dealers do not feel that way. You know, when you're buying a car, whether you're buying it online or you're actually going on the lot, it's important. It's incumbent upon you to do the research and understand what you're buying and understand the financing arrangements. If you decide to lease the car, understanding that before you sign the paperwork and leave. If you are unsure about it, before you sign the paperwork and take it home is the time to back out. Too many people wait until, you know, the newness has worn off and they come to their senses, and then they get the paperwork out and read it and say, "What did I sign?" So, you know, just do the work up front and not, you know, if you have a young person that's excited about buying a car, or you are, you know, you haven't had a car and new car in 10 years, and your husband or wife has suddenly given you permission, you know, to go shopping for a car, and you go out there and you want it now. And that's not always the best decision to make. If you can just hold off and just think about it and go and, you know, always take a really good long test drive, like I say, but just look at the numbers and just wait till tomorrow. If you want to leave a deposit, just make sure it's a refundable deposit just to hold the car. That's reasonable. I mean, if they ask you for a deposit, don't be insulted. They just want to secure it. That tightens it down a little bit for them and makes them feel all warm and fuzzy. So, but make sure that it's refundable and get a receipt. Don't hand the salesperson $100 and, you know, he said, "Well, all right, I'll keep the receipt for you." Nah, you know, just go ahead and get a receipt. Also, if it's a used car, just do your due diligence. You know, you can have the car independently inspected. If you're buying a certified car, you're probably okay. But if you are buying just a regular everyday used car and it's got a lot of miles on it, I would highly recommend that you get a third party to inspect the car. Put it up on a lift. Get somebody that knows what they're looking for to check the paint out and check the frame, make sure it doesn't have any frame damage. You know, Carfax does not always tell the story. Auto Check is another one. When you do these vehicle histories, if somebody had repairs done and didn't turn it into their insurance company, then there's nothing on the history report. I always check the warranty history also. I'll call the dealership that sold the car new, give them a VIN number, and they can pull the warranty history, and that's easy way to tell if the car's been in the shop a lot for a lot of problems. You know, you ever heard of a lemon? Well, a lemon is a car that most people refer to that as if they have to take the car in for the same problem multiple times and they can't get it fixed. Some people trade cars because of that, and they don't bother to tell the dealer that they're trading it into that this car has been in the shop a lot. And the only way you'll find that is the warranty history. And even though they weren't paying for it, think how inconvenient it is to take your car to the service department anyway. And when you have to go back and forth multiple times and the car doesn't get fixed, you get upset and you end up trading the car and let it be somebody else's problem. Well, you don't want to buy that car. And so check the warranty history. Other things is just, you know, just watch what you sign in the finance office and don't sign your rights away. Again, if you leave the dealership, you've paid for the car, you have no right to turn around and come back and get your money back. However, a good dealer will let you out of a deal if you come to your senses and just realize it's a mistake. But golly, you know, just don't sign the paperwork. Don't do the deal until you know that this is what you want to do. Are you ever going to be 100% sure? Maybe not. But if you are, you know, fairly sure that you want it, leave a deposit, go home, think about it, pray about it, do whatever you need to do to feel comfortable with it, and then don't ever think about backing out again. That becomes an issue that can affect your credit and a lot of other things as well. Well, that's the end of the show. Again, Lenny Lawson, my car guru. You can call me at on my cell phone at 423-552-2020. I'll be glad to be your car coach anytime you need me. Well, thanks a lot. We'll see you tomorrow.